This podcast is sponsored by Smartsheet, the cloud-based work management platform and best-kept secret of more than half the Fortune 500 companies.
How the app get made, explain your trade, what you love to do every day, the ins and outs of what your code's about, or the passion you know you can't live without. How's your data stored or sorted, transformed or imported? Let's chat a bit at a conference, and if it's cool, may re-record it. What framework do you like the best? Explain to us your unit test. Do you have a tip for JavaScript or a dev kit that we can tinker with? A process, a methodology, in depth, no apologies. Step up your code, stay on your toes, cross-cutting concerns with Matt Groves.
You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment.
On your toes, Cross-Cutting Concern with Matt Groves.
I'm recording this podcast on January 17th, 2018. My guest today is a staff engineer with FireEye and a former coworker of mine, Tim Wingfield. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Matt. The staff engineer thing, it is an actual step up from senior software engineer for us, so doesn't sound as exciting.
We talked about that all before the show. It's congratulations.
Thank you.
I want to talk about API design a little bit today, but first let's talk about what you're building and with what tools you're using. It's my understanding you're using Ruby, and you're working with a lot of internal APIs?
Our team, specifically inside of FireEye, we distribute a lot of our reports out to our customers and clients. So to do this, we have a number of internal APIs to collect information from, and we collect that. It's basically a Ruby on Rails site. I think we're at 5.0, can't quite get to 5.1, which would help, and a lot of React and JavaScript for the UI. But most of our API contact is done through Rails and various custom gems we've built to access the data.
Now, this may sound like a really fundamental question. Could you just explain what an API actually is?
Well, I guess if we go into the acronym, it stands for Application Programming Interface. In my mind, it is a way to quickly access serializable data in some way, shape, or form from someone who's exposing it to you, either to read it or to write it or both.
And within FireEye, within your projects, what kind of APIs are you using and what sort of stuff do they do?
It's a fair amount of report data. So we're a security company, right? So we keep track of malware and things of that nature. So those type of reports are accessible. One that I've been working on recently that it's basically a custom email delivery system. You want various reports to show up in your inbox daily. Then we expose both ends of that through an API, right? So how to save your data to the API and how to fetch it back out. One of the things that I actually jotted down and forgot to mention with the what is an API, like I said, it's just kind of a way to get data. With all the various interfaces to anything nowadays, right? We have mobile, we have web, we have IoT interfaces, all of that. Just exposing the data makes it much more flexible in how you can get information in and out of your system and make it more usable on the other end. That's kind of why we're API driven on our end as well.
And you say just exposing data as compared to what?
I guess if you're not exposing strict data, you're exposing the user interactions to it, you know, specific ways to view it. I guess I'm thinking very visually here.
You're a visual kind of guy.
I try to be.
I don't think you've mentioned REST yet or HTTP. Are those the kind of APIs you're actually consuming?
Yeah, almost exclusively. Everything is going to be through HTTP. We don't follow all the REST rules to the T, but it's REST-ish.
Would you mind explaining, again, just sort of fundamental briefly here, what REST means?
I don't know. I don't remember what the acronym is for. It's essentially a way to have some conventions over what actions you're going to call, right? So an index action is going to return all, a show action will return one, create would create a new thing, update would update an existing, or edit would update an existing.
Right. I don't remember what it means either, but I think it's something to do with resources, right? So it's very resource centric.
Right. And we mean resource and actual physical resources, not people.
Right. Okay. And you're usually calling these over HTTP. So it's a form, HTTP, I think, is a form of REST, or can be. So that's often why they kind of get used interchangeably.
Specifically for ours, the REST actions are kind of there. Most of our interactions are, if we do a GET, then we're going to get, if we don't provide an ID, we're going to get all of whatever type of information we're asking for. If we pass an ID, we'll get one, like in this case, if we're looking for into our report database. So we would get all the reports of type X, or one report of type X if we pass an ID. You know, you do a post to create, you do a put to update, do a patch to update as well, but in practice, a patch, you're going to update one, maybe two fields, and a put, you're going to update the whole thing. You're basically going to overwrite whatever record you're asking for. And then delete will do what you expect it to do.
Right. So these are typically, they kind of line up with the whole CRUD acronym as well.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, so you've worked with a lot of APIs. You've maybe created some, but you're on the consuming side a lot right now, is my understanding.
Yeah.
When looking at an API design, can you talk about some things that are painful in API design you've experienced, and maybe some things to avoid and some things to do to make a good API?
I would say the top of the list of any type of design, especially if you're working together with the team to make these things operate, is going to be communication. No matter what, I don't care what kind of software you're designing, if you're within the same company, talking to each other saves a lot of pain and effort. If you're pulling a public API, obviously that's not going to be the same, but usually there's still a way to access someone. But one of the things that I would strongly suggest is you allow your put and post actions to accept the exact same object structure that your get returns. If you're returning a JSON object structure that is two levels deep and has various keys and values, that your put and post accept those exact same keys and values. Whether you use them or not, it's much easier on your consumer to just pass the same object back and forth. Things will be different for a patch, right? Because you may only be accepting a field or two. Delete, probably just an ID. Try to pass the same object structure back and forth. Meaningful error messages are very helpful. We kind of talked about before the show. I wasn't expecting a 404 out of a API at one point. Turns out I should have been expecting it. That's my own failure. You know, the messages that come along with that 404, what's missing? Is it the whole resource is missing? The endpoint's not there? Or is it just the record I'm after? Make sure that you're providing information back to your consumer. And the big one, and this one's hit home here recently, don't allow just any data to be saved. Don't trust your UI or don't trust your consumer who's saving data to do all of the necessary business validation that you require. It's a service like any other service, and if you allow garbage to come in, then garbage will come in, and then you'll have trouble getting that garbage back out, right? Try to set that up. That's a pain point.
Are there any security implications there as well with just accepting whatever sort of data?
You know, the old-timey SQL, it's not even that old-timey, right? But SQL injection, any type of database hack, if you don't clean it up before it comes in, I mean, you're open to the world. You know, if it's a public release, even if it's not a public release, I mean, people get hacked and backdoored all the time, so if you don't put the wall up in front of your database, it's coming in.
So I know you've worked with .NET in the past, maybe in the far past from your point of view, but do you think any of this applies more to Ruby than to .NET or vice versa? Or is it pretty much the same no matter what?
API usage, in my opinion, is language agnostic, right? Because you're receiving some sort of serializable data. So if you're consuming it, the language really doesn't matter. Designing it, probably the same way the other way around. The APIs I'm accessing, I think two of them are written in Java, one of them's written in Python, consuming them with whatever you're most comfortable in. You know, design is design.
And this is kind of one of the keys of API is that it's exposed to your application regardless of language you're using, right?
Exactly. Right. This opens up the data to be used however you can consume it and wherever you're most comfortable.
What is the worst API you ever worked with?
It's going to be my most recent one, and I can't go into great detail about it, but the story is this. There was one system that contained both the UI and the back end that saved information. As we grew and wanted to expand this information, that UI went away because it didn't matter anymore, but we still needed the service. So the service was extracted and without any validation or rules ahead of it. So the old service had one entry point, and that one entry point took care of everything. Well, the new service, without even trying, we are already at three entry points into the system, and we haven't even laid anything out. And now all of the business rules need to be duplicated on all three ends, on all three situations. So there's a fair amount of tribal knowledge being passed around via email in my company right now. Probably other companies as well. Yeah, that one's kind of tough.
How could that have been avoided?
I don't know. We developed these things kind of in parallel. So communication obviously would have been key here. I'm not privy to the architecture and design information that they went through. So I don't really know.
On the other side of the coin, what do you think is the best API you've ever worked with?
I would say the best APIs you work with are the ones that you don't notice. So I've probably worked with a fair amount, but I can't really name names because they just worked.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's the whole goal, right? It's to not really know that you're using an API. You just get what you want and move on.
So the more you have to look up the documentation, maybe, the worse it is?
Yeah, that could be. I've bounced a few things off the Facebook API, Twitter API. They're all pretty well made. Kind of follow that and set those standards that you're kind of used to using.
Is there anything else I should know about API design that I haven't asked you about yet?
I would say, like any good software, test it. Test it often, test it in multiple ways, test it at multiple levels, and make your design flexible, because once you get this thing out in the wild, your consumers are going to use your API in ways that you'd never expected. I mean, it's like any user, right? For any application, they're going to find a way either to break it or to make it more interesting. So if you keep things nice and flexible, well-tested, and easily changeable, that'll help your API in the long run.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you for more resources and places to go if you're interested in learning more about API design. But right now I want to play the game that's sweeping the nation.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for your favorite game from Cross-Cutting Concerns, where the question is it a JavaScript framework or something we just made up? Now here's your host, Matt Groves.
Is it real JavaScript or not? And as you know, they give JavaScript libraries awfully funny names these days. In this game, I'm going to list three names of JavaScript libraries. Now, you have to tell me which ones are real and which ones are fake, meaning that I made them up. Real means that they are listed on npmjs.com at the time of this recording. And just to keep things interesting, if you get all three of these correct, you're going to win a $5 gift card.
Sweet.
Are you ready?
I think so. Now, I can't cheat because I have a big developer-laden clacky keyboard, so if I start Googling, you'll know.
Okay. Well, maybe you could do it on your cell phone or something. I don't know. You're on the honor system. Okay,
okay,
so here's the first one. Sheesh. S-H-E-E-S-H. Sheesh.
Sheesh.
As in sheesh, there are a lot of weird JavaScript packages. That's number one.
Okay, am I supposed to answer them one at a time?
No, I'll give you all three, and then you tell me okay. Which ones are real and which ones are fake. So sheesh is the first one. The second one is cloying. Cloying.
Cloying.
Cloying. And the third one is cod swallop. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Cod swallop.
Okay.
All right. So are you ready to make your guesses?
These are going to be sheesh. Sounds like it should be real.
Okay.
Cloying sounds as if it is directly from the brain of Matthew D. Groves.
Okay.
And cod swallop, none of us are making that up, so that has to be real.
Okay, so you say sheesh is real, cloying is made up, and cod swallop is real.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wingfield, you did not win.
Oh.
Sheesh is a real package on npm.js.
Okay.
Cloying is, you're correct, I made that up. It's a fancy word for sweet.
Okay.
And cod swallop is like a British term for nonsense. Basically, like what
nonsense.
A bunch of cod swallow. So those were both made up. So sorry, you did not win the prize.
I can tell you what I am going to name my next JavaScript package though.
That's right. So cloying and cod swallow are still out there for you aspiring JavaScript library authors.
That's fantastic.
What sort of resources would you recommend for someone looking to learn more about API design?
I'm not so good on the design side at the moment, but start with a quick Google. What is REST? What is HTTP design? There are a couple of API.org type resources out there that just give you the basics to get rolling. And then like any software, you know, good solid design, make it flexible.
Okay. And is there anything else you'd like to promote before we wrap up?
I don't have a lot going on the side right now. In the note you sent me ahead of time, you asked about Code and Coffee. It still happens. I believe it still happens in Stoffs here in Columbus. There were a few out and about in the rest of the world too, but I've kind of lost touch with a lot of it. On my personal side, I've been toying around with, you know, Arduinos and things like that, but nothing really big to plug.
My guest today has been Tim Wingfield. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt. It was fun.
Yeah, yeah. Cross-cutting concerns. Cross-cutting concerns.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2018. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this episode was made possible in part by Microsoft. This week's podcast was brought to you by Smartsheet. Are your projects pulled off like Band-Aids? You need Smartsheet. No more pain, just simple, collaborative, work management, in the cloud, from a beautiful UI. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Camtasia Recorder, Skype, and Audacity. Music is by Joe Ferg. Check out joeferg.com, J-O-E-F-E-R-G, to listen to more great music. Stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes. Cross-cutting concern with Matt Groves.
I just blanked out there. You'll have to do some editing.
No problem. Are there any security implications that